Hello, good evening. Thank you for joining today. Next performance entitled Ashes Axis was conceived and directed by the leading theater artist Mark Tae. Mark Tae is a director, researcher, and organizer whose diverse projects engage issues of history, memory, and urban context. And he's currently a member of Five Arts Center, in Malaysia, a collective of interdisciplinary artists, producers, and activists in Malaysia. In today's performance, Ashes Exile, Mark Tae will examine how public enemies are created, circulated, and remembered in Malaysia through the figure of Chin Peng. Chin Peng was a communist leader who led the Baling Talk, which were held in Malaysia in 1956 in an attempt to resolve the Malaysian emergency between 1948 and 1960, during which communist rebels fought a guerrilla war against the government. Despite the communist surrender in 1960, communist leader Chin Peng renewed the insurgency against the Malaysian government in 1967, which lasted until 1989. Was the most wanted man in the British Empire, he fled to exile in Thailand, where he lived until his death on 16 September 2013. And this work is produced in a cooperation with Hakave and has developed partly out of Mark Tae's renowned theater production Baling. Tonight's performance will be presented by Faik Siazman Kuhiri and Imni Nashusyung. Thank you and hope to enjoy.
The eyes of the world turned for a fateful 2 days on Baling near the Thai frontier for talks between government representatives and communist terrorist leaders. As the chief actors in the drama arrived, hopes ran high, not only among the Baling townsfolk, but among all the people of Malaya, that by some miracle the communists would repent of the evil they had done and surrender for the good of the country. The whole town flocks to the school, which has been prepared as the conference room, to watch the chief ministers arrive. Tunku Abdul Rahman and Mr. David Marshall are as one in their attitude to communism, supported by Sir Cheng Lok Tan. They are prepared to give the communists a fair hearing in the hopes of a peaceful settlement. The austere conference room waits with a sense of history, while a teacher's house has been prepared to accommodate the communists. There is little ceremony in the arrival of the communist delegates. Two ordinary police trucks with hard benches picked them up at the jungle edge and brought them into Baling. All necks crane for a glimpse of the number one terrorist. There he is, that's him. Chin Peng, directly responsible for a brutal 7-year campaign of murder and terrorism against the ordinary people of Malaya. Propaganda chief Chen Chan is with him, and also Abdul Rashid bin Maidin, who escaped from the Malacca detention camp in 1951. Nearly 100 pressmen and photographers wait expectantly as the talks are about to begin. The government delegation is confident, as well they might be, led by elected chief ministers with every right to speak with authority on behalf of the Malayan people. And then the communists, escorted by Mr. John Davis, the famous Force 136 guerrilla leader and former colleague of Chin Peng during the Japanese occupation. However starved his rank and file may be, it's obvious that the boss has been living well in his Siamese hideout. The communists' first demand, as expected, was for recognition of the Malayan Communist Party. This was flatly refused. They then demanded complete freedom for all terrorists should they surrender and the right to form a new political party. These demands were also turned down. The Tengku then yielded a point that surrendered terrorists could join existing political parties once they had proved their loyalty to Malaya. But further, he could not go without imperiling the country's security. The crowd and pressmen waited tense while the talks went into night session. But the communists refused to accept the amnesty terms. "The amnesty means surrender," they said. "We will not accept surrender at any time. We will carry on the struggle to the last man," thus proving beyond dispute that in their lust for power, they have no care or feeling for the ordinary people who long for the end of terrorism. There was no more that the Tengku could do without endangering the people he represents and the very country itself. So the communists returned to the jungle to continue their war, or to think again, certain of one thing, that they are now dealing with the people's representatives. Meanwhile, the chief ministers give the press a full account of what happened, freely answering all their questions. The Tengku declined to call the unsatisfactory outcome a breakdown. He is confident that the communists are so anxious to end the war that they will be ready for further talks when he returns from London. "I will never give in," he told them, "and the people of Malaya are with him."
In 1955, Malaysia and Singapore were still British colonies. And Malaysia was known by an older name, Malaya.
In 1955, the Baling talks took place in a schoolroom in North Malaya on 28th and 29th December.
2 years later, in 1957, Malaya would gain independence from the British.
The 1955 Baling talks were an attempt to broker peace and end the Malayan emergency, which had begun in 1948.
The British used the term emergency instead of war to ensure insurance coverage for the profitable rubber and tin industries and cast the communists as terrorist bandits.
The Malayan Communist Party, however, have always maintained the conflict as an anti-colonial revolutionary war.
The chief protagonists of the talks were Tunku Abdul Rahman, the newly elected chief minister of Malaya,
David Marshall, chief minister of Singapore,
and Chin Peng, the secretary general of the Malayan Communist Party. Although the British colonial government was not participating directly in the talks, they were following and recording the proceedings with great interest.
This is how we have the photos and transcripts from the talks. The talks took place 2 days before the Chief Minister of Malaya leaves for England to discuss independence with the British.
The 1955 Baling talks is also where the most wanted man in the British Empire, Chin Peng, emerges out of the jungles and steps directly into public gaze.
This is the first time many people would see Malaya's public enemy number one.
Unlike his comrades, Rashid Maidin and Chin Tien, Chin Peng seems aware.
Nervous, uncomfortable, cautious.
That he is being put on display.
He meets the gaze of the assembled media.
Local, international, hundreds of them.
Often looking directly into their cameras.
Perhaps he understands that he is being framed.
Recorded.
mediated,
hunted, captured. How did Chin Peng become Malaya's public enemy number one?
Before the photos of him at Baling, there was only one public image of Ong Boon Hwa,
or better known by his communist alias, Chin Peng.
This passport photo of 23-year-old Ong Boon Hwa was taken in Kuala Lumpur, Malaya in 1947.
Taken while suffering from malaria.
Ong Boon Hwa was followed to the photo studio by police special branch agents.
After Ong Boon Hwa leaves, the police special branch agent enters the studio and confiscates the negatives.
This image would become sole identification, advertising Chin Peng's capture dead or alive during the emergency years.
This image would be transformed by the British.
Cropped, tilted, blown up.
To become the most reproduced and distributed image in Malaya.
Ong Boon Hwa becomes Chin Peng.
Communist terrorist, staring from wanted posters in every town and village.
Ong Boon Hwa becomes Chin Peng.
Public enemy number one, flashed across the front pages of newspapers all over Malaya and Singapore.
Ong Boon Hwa becomes Chin Peng.
A mask without a body, printed on millions of propaganda leaflets.
Airdropped from the sky, a warning to the Malayan jungles and landscape.
$30,000, $80,000, $250,000, dead or alive.
There is a much less circulated image of Chin Peng,
taken a year before the notorious passport photos. Here, Chin Peng is seen receiving two medals, the Burma Star and the 1939-45 Star from Admiral Mountbatten, Supreme Allied Commander of Southeast Asia British Military Administration. Location?
Singapore.
Date?
January 6, 1946. Here, Chin Peng is seen being awarded for military services to the Crown by the British, who had returned and resumed colonial powers after the Japanese occupation of Malaya during World War II.
Chin Peng, as an officer of the Malayan People's Anti-Japanese Army.
Chin Peng, as British collaborator.
Chin Peng, as war hero. This photo is taken 2 years before the Malayan emergency was declared.
2 years before Chin Peng wages an anti-colonial guerrilla war against the British.
10 years before the Baling talks.
At the end of the 1955 Baling talks, Chin Peng goes back into the jungle. And the Malayan Communist Party begins their retreat to the border towns of South Thailand.
Malaya gained independence in 1957, and the 12-year emergency ended in 1960, having claimed the lives of 2,473 civilians,
1,865 security force members, and
6,697 communists.
Chin Peng would live in exile for the rest of his life, unable to enter an independent Malaysia. But through the reproduction and circulation of these few images.
War hero, public enemy, Baling.
He would haunt the Malaysian imagination for decades.
A new nation requires new foundations, new myths, and new enemies. And Chin Peng became the first and most powerful bogey in independent Malaysia. The face of the cold-blooded terrorist. The face of the communist bandit. The face of the Chinese traitor.
These images of an absent Chin Peng would find their way into new history books.
Residing in the jungles,
the place of spirits shadows and camouflage.
Chin Peng and his comrades were made present through stories, rumors, legends.
The communists can hide behind a single blade of grass.
Each one of them has the strength of 100 men.
Chin Peng himself is bulletproof.
The Malayan Communist Party is responsible for racial riots,
student protests,
industrial strikes,
election losses,
natural disasters,
unnatural accidents,
and all national political crises.
Chin Peng, just beyond the border, just out of reach, became justification for new emergencies in Malaysia.
My name is Faik Shazwan Kuhiri, and I am an actor. I've been involved in the arts for a number of years now, but one of my first instances of participation was in 2008, when a friend of mine invited me to participate in a four-hour-long reading of the 1955 Baling Talks in a gallery. This would be the first time that the entire transcripts of the failed peace talks would be read, heard, and witnessed in public. Here's a photo of that moment. I was younger. I was 19. I was also nervous and a little bit scared. Scared not just because that it was my first time in a public performance, but scared because of the fact that I knew that the event was being monitored by the special branch, the intelligence gathering unit of the Royal Malaysian Police. The special branch was first deployed in Malaya by the British to infiltrate organizations such as the Malayan Communist Party. In fact, in its budget request to the Malaysian Parliament in 2014, the Royal Malaysian Police asked for approximately 82 million euros for its 8,000 operatives to, and I quote, ensure the safety of the country through secret or open intelligence activities on the communist threat. Yep, 62 years after the Baling Talks, and communism is still a threat in Malaysia. I was keen to find out what people thought of that reading that I did. So it was funny that sometime later, I would learn that a blogger had labeled me and the other participants as communists because of that event. Here's a screen cap of said blog post. And it reads, apa patutnya tindakan anak cucu mangsa komunis kepada bangsat-bangsat ini? What should the grandchildren of the victims of the communists do to these bastards? In 2013, Malaysians received news that Chin Peng had died in Bangkok, where he lived in exile for decades. It was very symbolic that he died on 16 September, Malaysia Day. Rumors persisted that the announcement of his death was delayed to coincide with Malaysia Day. For several days later, images of Chin Peng's wake and funeral at the Thai Buddhist temple in Bangkok would appear in Malaysian newspapers, websites, social media. I noticed a pattern to these photos. They always featured a coffin, and next to it, a large photo of a smiling Chin Peng. I was struck by this. Maybe because it was unusual to see photos of people's funerals in the Malaysian media. A casket and a portrait, an invisible body, a frozen smile, a presence, and an absence. Some of these photos had people in them, and I wondered who these people were and why they were at Chin Peng's funeral. Maybe they were family or friends, comrades or dignitaries, admirers or curious strangers, journalists, or maybe even special branch members. Maybe they felt that it was important to witness an end of an era, the closing of a chapter in Malaysian history. This photo is taken from a news report with an interesting section about a man who was taking photos of those present at the funeral. While the speeches were delivered, a man wearing a jacket with a Malaysian crest and the words Embassy of Malaysia, Bangkok, was spotted taking photographs of mourners. Asked by reporters, the man, who could only understand Thai, admitted to be from the embassy and that he was taking photos as information. He also claimed that Malaysian intelligence had been attending the three-day wake and funeral since Friday. A few days later, we would read that some people who had attended Chin Peng's funeral were arrested at the airport when they returned to Malaysia. They had with them a pile of funeral booklets, a bunch of CDs, and some other Chin Peng-related memorabilia. I wondered why these booklets were confiscated, why they were so dangerous. Chin Peng, the man, was dead, after all. So in 2015, a friend of mine who had attended the funeral handed me a gift. And here is the funeral booklet. Entitled, Dare to Struggle, Dare to Sacrifice, rendered in English, Malay, and Chinese, this staple-bound, full-colored, 36-page booklet contains what some might consider Chin Peng's official narrative. Apart from some photos and a brief profile, the part of particular interest is this section entitled My Last Wish. In this section, written in anticipation of his own death, Chin Peng recounts and reframes his struggles, sacrifices, and longings. When you read this letter, I am no more in this world. Ever since I joined the Communist Party of Malaya and eventually became its Secretary General, I have given both my spiritual and physical self in the service of the cause that my party represented. That is, to fight for fairer and better society based on socialist ideals. Now, with my passing away, it is time that my body be returned to my family. It is most unfortunate that I couldn't, after all, pay my last respects to my parents buried in my hometown of Sitiawan. Nor could I set foot on the beloved motherland that my comrades and I had fought so hard for against the aggressors and colonialists. Chin Peng, Ong Boon Hua. After the funeral, Chin Peng was cremated and his body turned to ash. It had been his last wish towards the last 10 years of his life to return to Malaysia. In his last interviews, he would repeatedly mention that he would come home in one form or another. Perhaps his ashes would be brought back by his friends, scattered in the cemetery where his parents are buried, in his hometown in Malaysia. In 2005, Chin Peng filed a court application to compel the Malaysian government to allow him to come back. But in 2009, the Malaysian Apex Court ruled that because he could not find his birth certificate, he could not confirm his citizenship, and thus could not be allowed to come back. Unlike his comrades from the Malayan Communist Party who were allowed to return and resettle after the signing of the 1989 Hat Yai Peace Accords that marked the end of the communist insurgency, Chin Peng would remain the last communist, barred from entering, visiting, homecoming. Maybe Chin Peng is the thorn in the flesh for the state's official narrative of the nation. Maybe his return would jeopardize, destabilize, or contest that narrative. And that is why he can never come back. Yet, in many ways, Chin Peng in death returns. When Chin Peng the man dies, Chin Peng the bogey re-emerges out of the jungles, crosses borders, and steps directly into public gaze. His name strikes fear, as road names are rumored to be reimagined. His image is photoshopped onto banners of events that never happened, alongside Malaysian opposition politicians he had never met. Or emblazoned on street protest T-shirts, reinterpreted as Ksatria, an old Malayan Sanskrit word meaning warrior. Or imagined to appear where it never was. Police reports were lodged against this mural on the side of a coffee shop in Ipoh, claiming that it was a tribute to Chin Peng. It is unrelated to him at all, as this man, who is the actual face, tells us. And his ashes become a flashpoint for protests by retirees, former special branch operatives, former servicemen, ruling party supporters. They gather to remember old wounds, old battles, fading memories. By now, Chin Peng re-emerges not in physical form. He has dematerialized, broken down into more elemental parts, like ash or a virus. Chin Peng's presence overcomes traditional boundaries and mounts an asymmetrical guerrilla war against the Malaysian public imagination. And old fear, a new hysteria. As part of a research trip for a new version of Baling, I made a trip to Setiawan, Chin Peng's old hometown, and I recorded images of the place where he used to live, his old school, and the cemetery where he wanted to be buried and have had his ashes scattered. I also remembered that Setiawan was the first 3 years where I grew up. Here I am, standing behind a camera, unsure of what I was trying to capture.
I am a filmmaker. My name is Imri Nasution. I have met Chin Peng. In 2008, I was the cameraman for Revolusi 48, a documentary on the communist armed struggle for independence in British Malaya. 1 year earlier, in 2007, Malaysia had just celebrated its 50th anniversary of independence from the British. So naturally, there was a growing interest in looking into the alternative histories and forgotten possibilities for our nation. Along this track, many books were published, talks and forums were held, and films were made, rethinking and rediscussing our history. Over the years, several Malaysian filmmakers had actually tried to get an interview with Chin Peng, but they were always turned down. But in 2010, I received an invite to interview the exiled Chin Peng in Bangkok. I couldn't believe it when I first received this offer. Am I actually going to meet Chin Peng in person? This was the man who had shaped so much of the history of my country. Of course, I couldn't turn this offer down. So, 2 years after we've started work on the documentary, I, along with two other friends, the sound recordist and the director, flew to Bangkok to interview Chin Peng for 2 days. We had great expectations. This could be the interview to complete the documentary. Chin Peng is the final piece of the puzzle. And so, I set up the camera, we mic'd him up, and we began the interview.
Kalau Uncle, saya tanya apa pengorbanan paling besar Uncle untuk Malaya?
Nak katakan paling besar
But what I wasn't prepared for was the state, the man himself. It seemed to me that Chin Peng had lost most of his memories. He had trouble completing his sentences, searching for words, oftentimes keeping quiet. While we wait for him to answer, we wait for him to remember, we wait for him to speak.
Bagi pribadi saya, saya rasa pengorbanan saya paling besar.
This interview was a disappointment. There was very little material we could use for the documentary. And so the interview tapes were set aside, shelved, and Revolusi 48, the documentary, was never completed. 2015, 5 years after my meeting with Chin Peng, I finally decided to transfer and review the tapes. There were 8 tapes in total, roughly about 7 hours worth of materials. I realized I had never watched the tapes before. Why would I need to watch them? I was present during that interview. I was the one who had recorded and documented Chin Peng. But what I found in those tapes were absolutely different from what I had thought of during the interview back then. And as I continued watching, I felt a need for more people to have an opportunity to watch what I had recorded. We went looking for Chin Peng. But maybe we had found Ong Boon Hua instead. The following is a selection from the recording which had affected me most when I first reviewed the tapes. This is when Ong Boon Hua seemed clearest in sharing his thoughts.
Melayu memang tanah air kita lah. Dan Uncle masih ingin kembali ke Melayu, ke Malaysia.
Ya. Yeah.
Saya tanya sekali lah, kenapa Uncle masih ingin kembali ke Malaysia?
Ini tempat darah saya. Itu saya dilahir di situ dan dipelihara di situ menjadi besar. Bagaimanapun saya pun orang Melayu. Ini siapa pun tak boleh lakukan.
Dia perasaan nak kerajaan tak bagi nak pulang.
Ini soal kerajaan, ya. Saya kira lambat laun lah. Sekatan ini break lah.
Dalam Mobile The Star, beberapa bulan lepas Uncle cakap Uncle akan kembali pulang ke Melayu sama ada hidup atau mati.
Saya cakap itu. Tapi kerajaan atau pemerintah mau ke tak mau, saya pun tak tahu. Saya memang begitu berajam. Kalau ada peluang, saya memang nak mati-matian. Jalan kaki pulang untuk bersama. Kecuali ditahan di situ, di sempadan.
Ya, Uncle memang ada cakap Uncle mahu di kebumi di Melayu.
Ya. Ini satu angan-angan saya. Entah pemerintah bagaimana bersikap, saya tak tahu. Mereka tak setuju saya pulang mati di situ, saya kira kurang masuk akal lah. Saya orang lahir di situ. Saya nak balik mati tanam di situ. Kenapa saya tak boleh, saya tak ada hak. Itu satu hal simple saja.